Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, March 8th, 2024. Of course, I am Tim Geddes. I'm joined today by the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
Happy Friday, Tim.
Happy Friday to you. What a week it's been.
I know.
What a disastrous week it has been.
It's just, it never ends.
hopefully it is ending.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Hopefully
this is it. We do have a fun day of content ahead of us. We have Games Daily. We have Games Showdown. We're doing a fun stream where most people at the company are getting involved in a tournament for some fun stuff. A lot of fun to look ahead to, but just a lot of sad things to talk about as well.
Yeah. How are you doing with the Roosty situation?
You know, it's been rough. I haven't talked about it on content and I too much, and I'm not going to right now.
Yeah.
It's been very emotional. I've been crying a lot.
a whole lot.
I think the KF podcast will probably get into that a bit more next week or at some point. I don't know when, but I'm at the end of the day, more than anything, I want to celebrate everything that Rooster Teeth has been and what it's meant to so many people, both working there and that have been fans for so long, and everything in between, even if they're just a fan for one show or they dropped off or anything. Like, there's just so much to celebrate there. And seeing the response to the groups of people that are there has been very heartwarming, because I think they're going to be okay. It's going to be very difficult, but I think a lot of groups are going to be able to control their own destinies in ways that I understand the value of being able to do all of this.
Yeah.
And I think that they're going to be able to pull off similar things as well. So feeling hopeful about all of that. But yeah, thank you for asking. And there's just a lot going on. And we're about to get some other stuff that I'm sure you're going to have some thoughts on.
Yeah. I mean, my connection to Rooster Teeth is obviously different from your connection to Rooster Teeth, right? But like, that's one of those ones where going back to high school, right? I remember how important Red versus Blue was to people. And I came up, I started high school around when YouTube started like becoming the popular thing. You know, I was in high school and like, I started high school in 2007. And so it was like right when YouTube was going on, right? Which was also like, you know, Red versus Blue had already been going. YouTube kind of caught that on, and it felt like it was even becoming even bigger. And so the nerds that I knew in class were into Red versus Blue, right? But that evolved into other things. And, my gateway into like a lot of video game content online was Machinima, where I'll watch like so many of those shows and like watch all that stuff, right? And I know that stuff was rooted back into Red versus Blue, what that did for Machinima style content. But then that goes on into me finally circling around and getting into Rooster Teeth content, probably via Kinda Funny, I imagine, because I started listening to the Rooster Teeth podcast very regularly. I started watching Always Open, started consuming so much of that content and enjoying it and started loving it. And to be this many years later and being able to look back and see just the influence and impact that you have as a company, right? It's a small company that is doing something independent, and then you're able to grow and do something that's much bigger than yourselves, right? And have other people, you know, latch onto that and start to do their own versions of that. The influence is wild. And that's probably going to be the theme of this episode.
I definitely think influence will be the theme of this episode, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday we get together to talk about video game news and everything you need to know about it. You can watch it live on Twitch or YouTube. You can also get it as a podcast by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily on your favorite podcast service around the globe. If you love what we do, you can support us with the Kinda Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free. Watch us record them live and get a daily exclusive show. And for a chance to be part of this show, you can submit your thoughts and opinions as YouTube Super Chats as we go. Little housekeeping for you. A new PS I Love You XOXO is up, where the crew takes voicemail calls of your pitches for The Last of Us 3 and judge them Shark Tank style. You can get that on YouTube. What an amazing idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was very happy when it was me and Greg doing our weekly one-on-one meeting, and we were trying to figure out what to do for PS I Love You. And he was like, okay, yeah, like somebody wrote in, maybe we should pitch our Last of Us ideas. And I was like, well, we've done that before. And so, like, what if we did voicemails? Because one thing I love that a lot of podcasts I listen to have been doing recently is taking in voicemails. And me and Roger and Barrett did it for an episode of Kinda Funny Podcasts towards the end of last year. And it was such a fun episode. And so now I'm like, any chance I can take to like do a voicemail episode, I'm taking it. Yeah. And so the episode we put up this morning of PS Love You is so good. Like, people are so fun to actually like talk to and hear their voices. And yeah, like when you listen to a pitch and it is people being as nerd, like as nerdy, if not way more nerdy than you are.
I love it.
It's an infectious thing.
And I need to listen to that episode. That sounds like an amazing
pitch. I highly recommend
PS I Love You. Awesome. Yeah. And then thank you to our Patreon producers, Carl Jacobs, Kieran Hovasapien, and Delaney Twining. Today we're brought to you by Shady Rays and BetterHelp, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A Baker's Dozen!
Kev, the chat seems like
The internet is out. The internet is out.
So we're going to keep going?
We keep going. We're still recording.
Fantastic. Going to keep going here.
What's wrong? I don't know if it's the... I'll go check with everyone. Keep talking.
Thank you so much. Story number one. Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball and the artist behind Dragon Quest, Chrono Trigger, and numerous other works, has died. He was 68. This comes from Isaiah Colbert at IGN. News of Toriyama's passing was made public by the official Dragon Ball Z Twitter account on March 7th. Toriyama first broke into the manga industry at the age of 23 when he entered an amateur manga creator contest in Kodansha's weekly Shonen magazine. From there, Toriyama made a name for himself with the serialization of the beloved gag manga Dr. Slump in 1980. In 1984, Toriyama published the seminal fantasy action comedy shonen battle series Dragon Ball, which would later spawn the immensely popular Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super series. Dragon Ball's influence later inspired others like Ichiro Oda, Tite Kubo, and Masashi Kishimoto to create One Piece, Bleach, Naruto, and classics. Toriyama also played an influential role in gaming history, his art serving as the basis for Dragon Quest, one of the very first console RPGs in Japan. In the mid-90s, Toriyama famously teamed with Dragon Quest creator Yuji Horii and Final Fantasy creator Hironobu Sakaguchi to make Chrono Trigger, which is still considered one of the finest games ever made.
Gosh.
Bless. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that had me so emotional last night. It's wild, like, not to be like... So, when it comes to celebrity deaths, a lot of the time, I think I've gotten, and many of us, I think, with the internet and like how much celebrities there have become, like in nowadays, right? Like, so many celebrity deaths happen, and it is the thing of, oh man, that's sad, right? And like, I don't necessarily get in my feels. This one had me in my feels last night, and I think it was seeing everybody online sharing their experiences, sharing their love for Dragon Ball, Dragon Quest, Chrono Trigger, and all the works of Akira Toriyama, talking about the influence of Dragon Ball, talking about, like, you know, I go back, and I think I mentioned on the show and on content before that Dragon Ball Z, I have never sat through and watched the entire thing. Even with that being the case, I know the entire story of Dragon Ball Z, right? That is both through talking to friends, like just seeing episodes
video
of
games.
Video games. I played so many Dragon Ball Z video games, right? And I played every single Budokai, like Budokai 1, 2, 3, Tenkaichi 1, 2, 3. I even played a little bit of Ultimate Budokai, which was not a great game, but I played it anyway because it was Dragon Ball Z. That plus, like, you know, I think for me, where this starts is, you know, I mentioned I didn't watch Dragon Ball Z all the way through. I did watch a lot of Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball was like it came before Dragon Ball Z. It was Goku as a child. And it was a bit more like comedy, a bit more funny, a bit more juvenile than what Dragon Ball Z would become. And I absolutely adored it as a kid, right? Like, the tournament arc in that, I was super into. The back and forth between him and Krillin, the whole bit of, like, and I guess it wasn't a bit, but like the plot point of him and his tail and him turning into, like, you know, King Kong, essentially, and that being like a thing that everybody's terrified of. It all worked for me so well. And I don't know, it kind of just latched onto me. And I remember coming home one day and like turning on TV, turning on Cartoon Network, wanting to watch whatever was on, right? It was probably either Dexter's Lab or Cow and Chicken or some shit like that. And it was Dragon Ball Z, and it was them on Namek. I forget if Frieza, I think it was Frieza that they were like fighting at the time. And like, I didn't know what was happening. I just knew that it was like way more serious and way more intense than anything else that I was looking forward to on Cartoon Network. And as a kid, I remember watching being like, what is happening? And then like seeing the fights break out and being like, this is cool. Like, this is so cool. And I think so many kids from that era and so many people in general from that era, like that season, that version of Dragon Ball Z, I think, latched on to people in a way where going forward after that, if I was going to see action, especially in a cartoon or in an animation or anything, I wanted it to be like that. Like, I want the intense, I want the epic, I want people turning into like the stronger versions of themselves. There's a way that Dragon Ball Z permeated culture that was stronger than so many other things from that era that still to this day has so much influence and so much, like, you know, I mean, Sonic the Hedgehog has so much influence from Dragon Ball Z. 100%. He turned Super Sonic. Like, yeah. That's just Super Saiyan, right? Totally. Like, so many of the things we love start with what Akira Toriyama did with Dragon Ball Z, and it's so fucking special. So yeah, this one it's so sad, it hurts. He was young too. I think that's the 68. Thing that 68, like, that is young to be passing away. And yeah, like, it hurts. Like, rest in peace, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I've said this before, but like, Dragon Ball, unfortunately, was not part of my childhood. Kevin was really into it, but I didn't have Cartoon Network and I didn't have access to any way to watch this back then. So many of my friends were super into it. But like you were talking about, the influence of Dragon Ball, the influence of Toriyama's work is so important to my life and who I am in just such a, in some ways, roundabout way, but in so many ways, direct way. Because when you really think about it, again, we're talking about influence. We're talking about the original, the idea of what this thing is. But it works for so many different cultures to become its own culture, where if it weren't for Dragon Ball, would anime be as worldwide as it is? The answer is no. Mm-hmm. Would something else eventually would have gotten there and happened? Perhaps. But it is as big as it is because of Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball, like, made it hit in the West, especially, in a different way. Where, like, you know, the first anime I ever watched was probably Sailor Moon, because my sisters were watching it. And then also, like, I don't know, there were things. I guess Pokemon was way later, right? But, like, I think those things would have came through. But I think because of Dragon Ball, then you get things like Naruto, right? Then you get things like Bleach. Then you get things that, you know, the shonen anime that hit for like a certain demographic in such a big way. Like, that doesn't happen without Dragon Ball.
I mean, when you think about the anime conventions, the manga conventions, you walk into a Borders in like the year 2003 and there's an entire quarter of the bookstore that is manga.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And I feel like all of that, and even, you know, we talk about Cartoon Network, Toonami, right? The importance of Toonami, of the, like, growth of these children in, like, in that perfect time of, like, that growing up from little kid TV to, like, something more mature. But there's, like, that nice segue. And while a lot of people are watching Hannah Montana, a lot of people are watching Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like when you look at how much that has shaped and framed the individuals that grew up watching it, the individuals that were inspired by it to create something themselves, or whatever those things that inspired others to either enjoy or create based on, so much of it goes back to this art, this style, the concepts and ideas first introduced here. Like, that is incredible. And there are very few things like that. You know, when we look at anything in pop culture, Dragon Ball Z is one of the things where you could walk up to, like, my mom would know, like, be able to look at Goku and know it's Dragon Ball.
Oh, yeah.
I never watched Dragon Ball in my house a single time.
Yeah.
That's power, man.
Yeah, dude. I want to shout out to video games as well, right? Like, I want to start with the Dragon Ball games, but we'll also get to, like, the other games that Toriyama worked on, right? Because Chrono Trigger and Dragon Quest, like, come the fuck on. But starting with Dragon Ball, because that's where a lot of my love lies when it comes to the video game side. Like, Dragon Ball, Budokai, that series is a big part of what got me into fighting games, right? And that was one where I think so many people had, like, groups of friends that were into those games in ways that, like the Dragon Ball Budokai games, in terms of the actual quality of, like, the gameplay and stuff, not the best fighting games, right? Like, I mean, there's more of a reason for me and my friends to be into Tekken or be into Street Fighter at the time, right? Or be into Mortal Kombat or whatever it was.
Can I stop you real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
I think a big thing is power fantasy.
Yeah.
And that is what Dragon Ball Z delivered. And the concepts and so many of the ideas of these characters and Super Saiyan and the levels to it and all of that, the power fantasy. And then that translates to games in a way where you get to actually do it. It doesn't matter how good the game is.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, you watch Dragon Ball and you, like, you want to be able to do a Kamehameha, right? A Kamehameha wave. You want to be able to transform into Super Saiyan or Kaioken or whatever it is, right? You want to be able to teleport and fly and do all these things that Goku can do. And I think the fantasy part of it is the thing that is, you know, getting that fulfillment of picking up a controller and being able to turn Super Saiyan mid-match. That was the coolest thing ever. Like, it wasn't even about, I think for Dragon Ball, the games for me weren't even about winning. It was about, mid-match, I want to turn to Super Saiyan 3. Like, yeah, I want to be able to pull off the father-son Kamehameha with Gohan and Goku, right? Like, I want to be able to do these things.
I got chills you just saying that. And again, these are things that don't mean shit to me directly, but yeah, it means so much otherwise.
And like, when you have games that so fully realize that, right, like, it becomes less about how good are the fighting mechanics, and it becomes more so about how much fan service can you build into this thing to let people live their dreams. And the Budokai series does that so well all throughout, and Tenkaichi 3 is the one for me that really blew me away, just of the fact of well, I guess Tenkaichi 1, right? Tenkaichi 1 was the one that allowed you to kind of be behind the back. It was more of an arena fighter as opposed to like the 2D / 3D fighters that Budokai was. Being able to fly around like freely in a level as Goku or Android 16 or whoever, whatever character you're using, and like fight in like the actual Cell Games arena, and like have it be a thing of, oh, we are flying around, we're destroying this thing, there's like the real-time like things that are breaking apart.
Yeah,
that shit was fucking fire. Mm-hmm. And then you get to Tenkaichi 3, which had that, had like the dope ass, like, you know, like Tenkaichi 3 is a very good looking game. Like, that game looks way better than it has any right to as a PS2 game. That, and then also the amount of characters and the amount of fan service in that one, also such an incredible thing. But then you move forward, and Dragon Ball as a game franchise, talking about the fighting games in particular, because there's multiple genres of Dragon Ball games, but starting, talking about the fighting games, it went from Budokai to eventually coming back around to Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah.
And Dragon Ball FighterZ is a good fighting game. Mm-hmm. Granted, the new version that just came out has problems, but regardless, Dragon Ball FighterZ at launch in the way that it exists is such a good fighting game, and arguably one of the best fighting games of the PS4 generation. And like,
a hype game at EVO.
A hype game at EVO.
That's how legit a fighting game it is.
Yeah, it is so fucking good. And to see it make that circle around, to see even games like Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, Kakarot come out and like let you live through that story again, right? And it still feel like this thing that is special and a thing you get excited for, even if it is reliving the same story that we have in countless other games, mm-hmm, countless other versions, Dragon Ball Z Kai, whatever it is, it still works and it's still special. That's the power of Dragon Ball Z. But yeah, also, man, Chrono Trigger and Dragon Quest. Like,
Chrono Trigger, Dragon Quest.
Toriyama, I mean, dude.
I'm just saying this. I'm making assumptions here. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong about this, but did they create shooting a fireball from your hands? You know what I mean? Like, that concept of, yeah, like, because eventually Ryu does it in Street Fighter, but that was later, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, just that is like such a, I mean, perhaps like one of the top 10 most iconic, like, mm-hmm, fighting powers, like magic powers ever.
Yeah,
you know, like, what I mean?
Oh my god. But yeah, were you ever a Chrono Trigger person?
Yeah, Chrono Trigger for sure. And like, that's my thing. Dragon Quest, Dragon Warrior was never my thing. Obviously the art of all of it is like, it's just, I mean, so iconic. Yeah, right. I mean, like, you just look at it, you're like, you know exactly who did that, you know what it is. But Chrono Trigger, I mean, that Chrono Trigger is one of the most special games in existence, and I think a lot of it has to do with how every element of it felt so perfectly realized, and they got an artist this talented to do the character art.
Yeah.
And you look at it and it's like, it felt like it was based on something, even though it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It felt more important than just a video game at a time when video games didn't have that type of power. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, when you look at the box art of Chrono Trigger, or like the key art at least, it's like this, it felt so special and it felt like that world existed. And then you look at this 16-bit thing and like, it, amazing, beautiful game. Mm. But you can see the art while you're playing the 16-bit Super Nintendo game. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, that art style is so iconic, right? It's to the point when they announced the Sandland game. I forget what showcase. I think that might have been Xbox this last E3. But when they announced that, I guess not E3, Summer Game Fest, whatever it was, the Sandland game. I never heard of Sandland, but immediately I was like, oh, that's,
oh,
Akira.
We know what this is.
Yeah, that's Akira, yep. Toriyama. Like, that is that art style right there. It's timeless. It works so well. And yeah, like, to that point, right? Like, yeah, the fact that back in the day you were able to partner with an Akira Toriyama and it feel like this thing of, oh yeah, we got the guy. Mm-hmm. And you put that out as a game and it ends up being like an all-time great, right? Dragon Quest ends up being a thing that stands the test of time. And now we're on what, Dragon Quest 12? Somewhere in that sphere.
What would Final Fantasy be without,
yeah,
this, you know? And it's like, you look at so many characters, and I saw somebody posting pictures yesterday of Cloud, and it's like, yeah, Cloud wouldn't exist if Goku didn't.
Yeah, like, I mean, Cloud has that,
the hairstyles.
Yeah,
just think about the hairstyles of these. When we say like, oh, anime characters, what are we really saying?
Cloud's outfit is like Trunks-esque. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, yeah, we straight up took that from Trunks. I want to shout out some of the super chats we have here. DJ Kento says, put a one in chat if you drew Goku or a character in Toriyama style after watching Dragon Ball. Here we have E. Cabrales Giz, who writes in and says, Toriyama sensei is out there training with King Kai.
Dropping the ones.
And then, oh my God, On God Sharma gives us, actually, I don't know what currency that is or how much that is, but they give us a super chat. For a second, I thought I said $200, and then it has a different icon. So I'm like, oh, actually, I don't know how much that is. But they say that there would not have been modern pop culture with Akira Toriyama. No Final Fantasy, no long form sagas running TV series, no Naruto, no One Piece.
I mean, so much of that is just absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And some of it can feel like hyperbole, but then you start breaking it down, and you're like, is it though?
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I think that's the most amazing thing about this. And again, what a sad thing to have somebody so young, so talented, taken so soon. But also, it's not like there is a lack of amazing things to be able to look back and celebrate. And you're talking about how many times have you relived the story, whether it's watching it, whether it's playing a game, playing another game, whatever. I think that there's something so beautiful about the fact that you can love something now that you were nostalgic for then, and that new nostalgia can form.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you release a new, like, if Dragon Ball FighterZ 2 came out, right? Like, I'll play it. It would end up becoming another, like, another point of reference of, oh, man, this is how much I love this thing. I still haven't, like, at one point, I want to watch Super, you know? And, like, the funny thing is, because I started over the Christmas break, I did put out a tweet that I was like, yo, should I watch Dragon Ball Z Kai? Like, is that a viable way? And a lot of people were like, oh, yeah, you can watch it, right? And I started watching it, and I fell off very quickly. But I know that story so well already that, like, I could just hop into Super, I'm pretty sure, and be fine to like start off from there. I mean, I did watch quite a bit of GT back in the day, weirdly enough, and which took place after Dragon Ball Z, but then it was like not uncanonized. But like, yeah, like that's the kind of a thing you have here with Dragon Ball Z, right? Where it is, you can just jump in and fucking have a blast, right? And you're right, the like new nostalgia can form by going back to the same thing. But yeah,
On God Sharma writes in again, says Cloud was based on Teen Gohan.
Oh yeah, I could see that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't know what Teen Gohan looks like.
I mean, he had pretty much on like the same outfit that Cloud has.
Yeah, God. Any final thoughts on this, Bless?
I mean, rest in peace, right? Like, I'm sad. I'm sad that he's gone, but I am more happy that he was here in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that you're able to come through and have such an immense impact on people.
Oh,
yeah. Thanks, God, for this.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I think there's even other, like, but without, like, the shoulder piece, if you see Teen Gohan, like, it's like, okay, yeah, that's Cloud. Like, they made Cloud after this character. That and Trunks. Like, I think there are versions of Trunks that you might be able to find that are, oh, this is him.
Yeah.
But,
maybe Zach then, you know?
Yeah, like, the fact that you were able to come through and have this amount of impact on people, right? And, like, your art does that. Like, I think that's the dream of any artist. That's the dream of anybody who wants to be a creative or make things. And he did it. He did it on a level that I don't think anybody could even imagine, right? Like, back in the 80s and the 90s, you fast forward to now, and this is what Dragon Ball Z means to the world, and what Dragon Ball and his works in general mean to the world. And so, yeah, like, good work, Toriyama. Rest in peace, Toriyama, and you will never be forgotten.
Absolutely. Well said.
Yeah, like,
I mean, it's just ridiculous. Yeah, like, the high belts with the like little hourglass waist going on there, man. With the big old pants.
Come on.
Boots. Love it, man. Story number two here. Yesterday, Bless, I told you the Princess Peach Showtime demo dropped, and I was like, I'm going to play it, and I did last night.
Oh.
So now I want to give you my thoughts on this thing. It's good. It's just good.
Oh.
And I'm honestly a little let down. And let me start by saying this. I'm a mega Nintendo fan. I love Nintendo IP. I love Nintendo games. There's a magic to them, and I am able to have an understanding of not every game, period, but specifically not every Nintendo game, is going to be made for me.
Yeah.
It's not going to be made for a 34-year-old man that has played them all before and blah, 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 right? But even when it's not made for me, I can understand who it's made for, and I can see the magic. There's magic here. Mm-hmm. There is magic here.
Okay.
But I would equate this more to a Yoshi's Story than a Yoshi's Island.
Don't say that.
I would equate it more to...
Nobody wants to hear that.
To just sticking with Yoshi here, it feels a little bit more Yoshi's Crafted World than even a Kirby's Epic Yarn. And
the streets are saying that it's being made by the Yoshi team. Did you see this?
The streets are saying it because Nintendo's not.
Yeah.
Nintendo's not officially saying who's working on this game, which is a weird trend that they've had recently. We didn't know who made Super Mario RPG Remake until the game came out.
We don't know who made Tears of the Kingdom either, you know?
Yeah. But it's interesting that they are putting this game out at the end of the life cycle, and it totally makes sense. The Mario movie made the Mario franchise and Princess Peach more popular than ever. She's never had that big of a being put at the forefront placement ever. Yeah. You know, she's had a game here or there or whatever, but like Anya Taylor-Joy in the Super Mario movie is one of the main characters, and like they purposefully presented her that way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So putting this game out totally makes sense of what they're trying to do and who this game's being made for, and I think it's going to speak to that group very well. This is a children's game through and through, and I think it's going to be an amazing introduction to video games to a lot of people, and even little decisions that I think are kind of great. There's not VO. You have to read this stuff. I remember being a little kid not being able to read and wanting to know how to read so I could understand what the game was telling me. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I feel like the way that it's presented here, it's going to make kids want to be able to read this stuff. They'll have their parents helping them and all of that. But beyond that, it's a very simple action game. You're going through. It is, I would say, less 2D platformer, not even 3D platformer. It kind of functions that way a bit. Mm-hmm. But it is more similar to a very basic Bayonetta type game or a Devil May Cry type game with mini games on top of it. So you're going through these different levels. They take place on a theater stage, and you're playing in different plays, and you put on a different costume, and now you're Sword Buckler Peach, or you're Baker Peach, and you go through, you fight these enemies. It is extremely simple. Like, you have many hearts for your life meter. If you get hit, you lose a heart, but you can get hearts back pretty much any which way. You break anything around you, you're going to get a heart. You can talk to a guy and double your heart count in the little hub world. Like, there's so many things that are put there to make this very, very simple and easy. But I think it's well-designed in that way, where it's going to teach a lot of kids the concepts of video games and the tropes of video games to get familiar. And I can imagine this being a lot of people's first game, but not their last game. I think that this will turn people into lifelong gamers, which that's the goal, right? Like, that's amazing. It's then, to me though, the letdown is Nintendo magic should work on everybody. Mm-hmm. And I do think that this is going to be great for those younger kids and parents with younger kids, but there's some things that I find a little bit of a letdown. The performance is very bad.
Oh, like, it's not, like, is it stuttery?
It is very, very stuttery.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's not something I expected for a game like this.
Yeah.
You know? And it's pretty apparent from the jump. There's a lot of loading screens that are not short. And the loading screens are like a theater curtain. Mm-hmm. And the theater curtain is
very
framey.
Yeah.
And you just have to watch it for like 30 seconds. And it just is not a good experience. And then you get into the levels, and the music is like, the themes themselves are totally fine. Not really memorable, but totally fine. But the quality of the music, like, it is, when you're used to Nintendo sounding a certain way, this sounds like some cheap electric keyboard sound effects and stuff. And I looked up the price of this game. Yeah. And it's $60. Mm. And granted, I just played a demo. You guys could all play the demo right now and see everything I'm saying. I am shocked that that $60 price point, and that does not feel right. I don't know how long the game is going to be. I don't know what it's going to offer. But the level of quality that I'm seeing so far in this, $60 seems very egregious. This definitely feels like a budget game. And at a budget level, I can understand its place a little bit more. But having said that, I think the biggest letdown for me isn't the performance, it's the, so far, lack of like the magic of a Luigi's Mansion 3, where it's like, you can take something that's kind of simple, and that could, the Luigi's Mansion, great game for kids or adults.
Yeah.
This just kind of lacks that bit. There's a lot of things to collect, and I like collecting things in games and like these type of games. There's a bunch of different like coins throughout the level, and then there's like these like blue star things that are the more like secret hidden things. And there's two levels you get to play through. In both of them, I didn't get every collectible, and I was trying to.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. There's some challenge here, or there's something that
you can chase.
I can chase, and like something I can find here. When the game comes out, I think I'm gonna play through it. But that's more just because I really want to see if it turns into something a little more special down the line. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so far it's simple to the point of being a great first thing for kids, because you're walking around with the left stick. There's a jump button and there's an action button.
Yeah,
that's it. Oh. And your action button, it is essentially a hit this button to win button. You are not doing combos in any type of way that, like, you have the sword, you just tap A, and she's flippy-dippy around. Like, it's Yoda in Attack of the Clones. You beat everybody on screen, and I'm sure it's going to make a lot of kids feel really good.
Yeah.
It's going to be that power fantasy, and it's going to work for them. And that's beautiful. That's excellent. But I think that older people and more experienced gamers are going to get frustrated more than not with things like performance issues and kind of just a lack of polish that this has. Mm-hmm. And this coming out at the end of the Switch life cycle, I think, is really where I'm most down on this, because had this been a 3DS game that was ported to the Wii U, I'd understand it a bit more.
Yeah. Oh my God. Don't say that.
That's where I'm at.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, that bums me out a bit. I think the idea that this could be a game for very young kids, right? Like, I have a nephew that's 4 years old, and I could, if he wanted to play it and have fun with it in that way, I could see the market there. But then, yeah, the $60 part of it is the part that bums me out. Cause, like, if it is a thing of, hey, we're making this for kids, it might be like a bit framey, or might not have as great a performance, or like might have loading screens and all that stuff. I feel like if I'm making that as a very young kids game, kids don't care. Like,
oh, I know.
You know,
but, absolutely.
But then it's like $60.
That's my thing.
I don't think I can convince my sister to buy her son
that's the
this
problem.
For $60.
You're really nailing it there, Bless. It's like there's I totally understand this game existing, and I think that it's very good that it does. Because, yeah, 5-year-olds aren't going to care. And I think even older than that, like, people, this game is going to resonate with a lot of people, and it's going to be awesome. And again, it's going to turn people into gamers. But that $60 price point feels like it deserves a lot more polish, if I'm being honest. And this is just the demo. Maybe they'll fix it, but I doubt it, because doesn't it come out in like 2 weeks?
Yeah, it comes out March 22nd.
Yeah.
So,
but we'll it's this definitely, if your kids are out there and they like the Kirby games, not Forgotten Land. This is not a Forgotten Land, and I really wish that it was. Bless.
Yeah.
But if they like, you know, Kirby Star Allies or something like that, or the recent Yoshi games, download this demo. Give it a shot and see what's up, because I feel like it's going to be for some people, but I am kind of regretting having it on my Fantasy Critic.
Oh, actually, that actually makes me kind of happy, because I need some more competition. I'm not doing so great on the Fantasy Critic so far. Like, yeah. I'm not doing bad. It's just that other people are doing better.
Yeah.
You know, it's like fucking Bear with Bellatro. Why would you get that? Who told you?
Get it. Who told
you? Who told you about Bellatro 2 days?
There's a conspiracy here.
Oh, 1,000% there's a conspiracy. And then what? I forget what my counterpick was. My counterpick is Metroid Prime. And I'm becoming more and more convinced that it could come out this year. And I'm like, if Metroid Prime comes out this year, then I'm just dropping out the thing. There's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of scared about my bracket. So I earned my Fantasy Critic. And so I got to, I need more people to have more L's. And so shout out Princess Peach for coming out. I'm going to need that.
We're going to get to story number 3. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Shady Rays, an independent sunglasses brand that has over 300,000 five-star reviews. They are on a mission to match affordability with durability, making top quality shades accessible to everyone. They have tons of styles and colors to pick from, so finding the perfect polarized shades is a breeze. If you want an upgrade, we recommend their premium Color Rush lenses. Crafted with rare earth materials, these lenses bring high impact color to life, elevating reds, blues, and greens. Here at Kinda Funny, we all love wearing our Shady Rays, whether it's me looking dope doing my Pokemon Go walks, Snowbike Mike rocking the snow goggles, or Joey just looking fantastic in her tangle-free shades. If your shades go MIA or take a hit, don't sweat it. They've got lost and broken protection, so you're covered from day one. And if you don't love your shades, exchange or return them for free within 30 days. Exclusively for y'all, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. Head to ShadyRays.com and use code KF20 for $20 off each pair of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Again, that's ShadyRays.com and use code KF20 for $20 off each pair of polarized sunglasses. This episode's brought to you by BetterHelp. Whether it's friends, partners, or coworkers, I am blessed to have many amazing relationships in my life. But a common misconception about relationships is that they have to be easy to be right. But sometimes the best ones happen when both people put in the work to make them great. Therapy can be a place to work through the challenges you face in all of your relationships, whether it's with friends, work, your significant other, or anyone else. Some of my best friends use BetterHelp and love how helpful it can be for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/kindoffunny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/kindoffunny.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tim, we got some super chats that came in. Angad Sharma, who I've not been informed is paying in rupees. So thank you so much for that. They wrote in, says Cloud is based on Teen Gohan. And with that, I found a good comparison image that if you can bring up, Kevin. Yeah, no, this is, it's so fucking clear. Yeah, when you see this, Gohan without like the shoulder piece and it's him just with his purple garment with the red belt, like, come on,
this
dude.
Is hilarious.
With the yellow hair, like, that could just be Gohan as a character on the left.
Awesome.
And that is Cloud. That's amazing.
Yeah. Man.
And then we have another one from Iman Hall.
God, also, can you just bring that up again? We just played through Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and we got to see this scene in it. Think Did about that Tim in the library.
Oh yeah, we do. Oh my god. Jesus.
Amazing.
Man.
Amazing. Video games are cool.
Iman Hall also writes in and says, without Akira, there's no Dragon Quest. Without Dragon Quest, there's no Final Fantasy. Without Final Fantasy, there's no Kingdom Hearts. So Akira made Kingdom Hearts possible.
Thank you for your service.
There you go.
Story number three. I don't even want to say their name at this point. You know what I mean?
They pissed me off.
Warner Brothers might be delisting Adult Swim games titles. This comes from Wesley Inpool at IGN. There are fresh fears Warner Brothers Discovery plans to delist all Adult Swim games, including the likes of Pool Panic, Duck Game, Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality, and Kingsway within the next 2 months. Shout out to Duck Game. Super fun multiplayer game.
Really?
Very big party mode type game.
Okay.
We should bring that back for some streams.
I mean, better buy it soon.
If you fucking can. This week, the creator of Small Radio's Big Televisions, Owen Deary, tweeted that Warner Brothers Discovery has informed him that his indie game would be retired in the coming weeks. The game, Small Radio's Big Televisions, is published by WB Discovery subsidiary Adult Swim Games. Deary told Game Developer that Warner Brothers Discovery will pull Small Radio's Big Televisions from storefronts in the next 60 days, according to an email sent to Deary. Warner Brothers Discovery said it can no longer support Small Radio's Big Televisions due to internal business changes. IGN's asked Warner Brothers for comment. Now, another developer of an Adult Swim Games title has said they were served the same notice, sparking concern that Adult Swim Games' entire slate could fall by the wayside. As spotted by delisted games, Matt Cain, one of the original creators of Fist Puncher, took to the game's Steam page to say Warner Brothers Discovery had been in touch and expressed their disappointment in the news. Quote, we've asked that Warner Brothers simply transfer the game to our Steam publisher account so that it can stay active, but so far they've said no, with the reason being that they made the universal decision not to transfer the games back to the original studios and do not have the resources to do so. No, the transfer process is not that complicated. It likely takes about 2 minutes on their end. This is incredibly disappointing. I'm not entirely sure what will even happen if the game gets delisted, but it makes me sick to think that purchased games will presumably be removed from users' libraries. Our community and our players have 10 plus years of discussion, screenshots, gameplay footage, leaderboards, player progress, unlock characters, Steam achievements, Steam cards, etc., which could all be lost. We have Kickstarter backers who helped fund Fist Puncher, even some who have cameo appearances in the game, who will eventually no longer be able to play it. And Kevin brought up a list of Adult Swim games that are potentially at risk.
Which includes games like Samurai Jack, Battle Through Time. That was one that we played a couple years ago when that came out. Like you mentioned, Rick and Morty, Virtual Rickality. Also includes Headlander, which like a lot of people talked about Headlander when that came out back in the day. That was 2016. And I remember that being like a big indie game that came out this that year. But then, yeah, the list goes on. There's a lot of these games that were published by Adult Swim games. And this is absolutely wild. It's like Warner Brothers and Embracer are having an L off right now. They're like, who can take more L's?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really, really, really scary for all of it, right?
Yeah.
But just focusing on Warner Brothers here, the amount of different verticals that they have their hands in, and they have ownership of, like, so many top parts of, like, flowcharts and trees of the things that this will affect of, again, culture across the board. When we're talking about content, video games, movies, entertainment of all aspects, like music, like Warner Music, like there's so much that they are just completely fucking up and there's no end in sight. And the fact that we're now hearing the 60 days thing from multiple groups, whether it's Rooster Teeth having 60 days to remain, these games being delisted in 60 games, what else is there? And what's going to happen on day 61?
What is going to happen on day 61? They're just going to have nothing? Like you like go online and just like, oh, fucking Warner's gone. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing is like, really, like, what to what end is this battle being
won? Yeah, I don't understand what Tim, you're way more in the know than I am when it comes to, I think, like, even Warner Brothers shit. I assume you are. You might be. I don't understand what's happening. Like, what the fuck is going, is it?
Desperation to appease shareholders.
Lost a bunch of money and now they're like shut down everything.
It's investing, it's over investing, it's ballooning and needing infinite growth. And again, I'm not saying anything surprising here, but like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the promise of more in the wake of a global pandemic that didn't stop anybody from adjusting the scales of reasonable business.
Yeah.
And instead, it resulted in changing and new things coming up that resulted in more money from different places that they wanted more. And there was no balance. It was just more across every single lane. And now every single lane's being looked at. And the problem is, when you take apart pieces, the whole can't function.
Yeah.
And all of this is going to continue to get to a point that, like, they're even talking about here, it's too difficult. We don't have it in place to be able to do the thing. And game devs are like, it's not that difficult at all.
Yeah.
Even it not being difficult still requires somebody to do it. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the problem. There's not going to be people to do it.
Yeah.
So they're not even thinking about that. They're just trying to like cut and run.
Yeah, we're cutting so many things that we can't even manage, like how to fucking properly disperse these things and like, you know, give the rights to the games back to the developers or do whatever, right? It is, we're cutting so much, we don't have time to think about this. We're just fucking trying to I guess plug the holes and try to not lose as much money here. And by doing that, we're fucking laying off a lot of people and like shutting down a lot of things. It's fucking, I don't know, man. This week has been rough for this shit. I mean, this year, but yeah, this is like another level of, yeah, we're delisting all these games that people like, you know, that on the video game preservation side of things, right, sucks in terms of, oh man, there are so many people I know who love Headlander or love Samurai Jack or love plenty of the games on this list. Right now it seems like we don't even know if when these games get delisted, can I still play these games if I own it?
I mean, look at the movies, Batgirl, Acme versus Coyote. It's happening, and I still don't believe the fact that they just are deleting these movies from existence before they even come out.
Yeah.
Like, for tax write-off reasons. That sounds like the most criminal thing ever.
Yeah.
And it's just happening. And yeah, these games, delisted, potentially. And how fucked up is it, Bless, that potential doesn't sound like, in some world, maybe that might happen. It seems like, hey, it's likely
this is probably going to happen. Like, this is, yeah. Well, hopefully, if you've already bought these games, you won't lose access, but it seems like that's not promised.
That is a big hope.
Yeah, that's a big hope. And so, I don't know, play Headlander while you can, play Samurai Jack while you can. This is wild.
Story number four. Spider-Man 2's latest update accidentally unlocks debug menus, which list potential DLC. This comes from Chris Scullion at VGC. The latest update for Spider-Man 2 accidentally gives players access to developer Insomniac Games debug tools. They're just going through it, man. Mm-hmm. God damn.
Yeah.
The version 1.002.000 update, which went live today, adds a new game plus, which includes new features, including the ability to go beyond the base game level cap, unlock new symbiote suit styles, and upgrade gadgets with golden styles. Other new features added in the update include the ability to replay missions and the ability to change time of day in post game. However, players soon discovered that it also unlocked access to the game's debug menus, which are used during development to skip to certain parts of the game, perform diagnostics, and turn on various modifications. Some players are also suggesting that the debug menu lists missions which aren't in the game and could be DLC, relating to a separate character who hasn't yet appeared in the game, Beetle.
You know a Spider-Man character named Beetle?
I don't. And I know Spider-Man pretty damn well.
You think there's a Blue Beetle crossover?
In the Spider-Man comics, Beetle's a villain who's also the daughter of Tombstone, a character who already features in the game. It should be noted, however, that not all content or references found in the game's files actually end up being used, and there's therefore a chance that the missions listed in this debug menu refer to previous planned content that was canceled. Insomniac posted a message on its official X account saying it was already working on a fix to remove access to the debug menu and warning players that it could lead to issues with their game.
What's going on in Spider-Man's New York, where so many people are just like, oh, I'm going to name myself after a bug.
Yeah.
I'm gonna name myself Beetle.
Yeah.
Because why not? We got Spider running around. We got multiple Spider-Men running around. Mm-hmm. And Spider-Women. There's Scorpion.
Scorpion's bug adjacent, you know?
There's a Vulture. That's not a bug.
I think this is that character.
Oh, interesting. Okay. If I remember correctly, this was in the Superior Foes of Spider-Man alongside Shocker and some other lower end. Spider people, Rogues Gallery. This is interesting. It's weird to me because on one hand, reading through this, I'm like, this doesn't sound like DLC. This sounds like stuff that was just scrapped from the game. But on the other hand, you look at the DLC from the first one and the characters it focused on, like Hammerhead and those. I'm like, all right, cool. Beetle, perhaps that would make sense. Like, I don't think that they're going to go for one of the... We're not getting Green Goblin in
DLC. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, and also you already have the story kind of set up with Tombstone. And so if this is actually... Yeah. If it's going to be like the comics and Beetle is Tombstone's daughter... There could be some continuation there.
Yeah.
I think you can make that feel loop back into the story and like actually feel personal for that character.
Beetle was in Superior Foes. Hell yeah. Shout out to Tim Reed, a comic in 2013.
Let's go. But yeah, I mean, I would like Spider-Man DLC. I think that'd be really cool. And yeah, if you're going to do DLC, I think adding in a couple more of those characters. Yeah, like a Beetle. I want to see. There's some threads that were set up in the base Spider-Man 2 game that I would love to see continued on in DLC that I think could be neat. And the way they do it, I would think that you're getting, if they do DLC, I think you're going to have maybe two to three
totally
notable like characters that you're going to be dealing with. And so Beetle is one of them, you know, being that Tombstone or having that Tombstone lineage, I think could be really interesting.
And I can also imagine them, Beetle being a character that doesn't really have too much like fan care. So they can kind of like
they can be creative
in the same way they did with Mr. Negative or with Tinkerer, right? Where it's like, let's take characters and completely change who they are to make them more interesting to this world, specifically Tinkerer with that. So
And I'm thinking like, I mean, honestly, in my mind, Beetle, you would use Beetle as a like set of activities around the city, right? Like, I think it'd be one of them ones where it is, oh man, Beetle's wreaking havoc. Who the fuck is Beetle? Like this new villain. And then you learn at the end of their story that they're the daughter of Tombstone. Because in my mind, I have an idea of who the main villain is for the DLC. If you do the DLC, spoilers for the base game. I don't want to say the spoilers.
Okay. Maybe not then.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I won't say it.
Brian Itzhar was bringing up Daredevil.
No way. Really?
On our
spoiler cast.
Yeah.
That would be sick.
But like, not as a villain, but like.
But like, I feel like that's, maybe,
I don't know.
Is that DLC or is that like Spider-Man 3? I guess maybe that'd be too much of a like left turn for Spider-Man 3. Just that'd be sick.
But I don't even know what that would look like. But interesting stuff. We'll see what comes of this. Do you think we get Spider-Man 2 DLC?
I'm not convinced. Also, I just DM'd you who I would think the main villain would be. Just based on Spider-Man 2.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be like the coolest thing to do?
Mm. Let's talk later.
We'll talk later. Okay. But sorry, what were we just talking about? We just said something.
Oh, DLC.
DLC. Yeah, I'm not convinced. Just mainly because I'm not convinced that DLC for the first game was super successful in what they wanted it to be, right? Like, if you're going to make DLC for a game, you are limiting yourself to the audience that already has that game in hand. Granted, Spider-Man 2 sold a lot of copies, but even still, right? Like, how many, what percentage of that audience is going to show up for that DLC and actually buy it and actually play through it? I feel like Stadia That Never Sleeps was one that never felt like it had the conversation around being that, oh, everyone needs to play this. You have to show up for this. Like, I feel like I rarely hear people talk about Stadia That Never Sleeps. And I compare that to something like what's a game that has DLC that everybody felt like they needed? Like a Cyberpunk, Phantom Liberty, or the upcoming Erdtree, right? Like, everybody's going to play Elden Ring, the Shadow of the Erdtree. Like, that bought Elden Ring.
It's funny because I think in a lot of ways, Miles Morales was that.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, that's a complicated statement, but you get what I'm saying. I feel like both Phantom Liberty and Erdtree are being built almost as standalone games in the same way that Miles was. But I agree that Stadia That Never Sleeps was more traditional game DLC.
I enjoyed it,
but it did just feel like more for more's sake. There was some cool stuff there. Really cool stuff. I love the Black Cat stuff. Yeah. I just love Spider-Man. And my thing is, I'm so with you that I'm not sure we're going to get it. Like, I actually don't think it's even likely necessarily that we get DLC in the style of Stadia That Never Sleeps. I would very much welcome it because I feel like Spider-Man 2, now that it's over, we beat the game, we platinumed it, there's nothing to do.
Yeah, like, there is nothing to do in that game.
That's not an insult to the game. Like I had an amazing experience with it. But I feel like, especially now that they're adding the new game plus and like where we're at, I'm like, I would like more things. I would like a reason to go back and play, but
I think you would have to treat it differently, right? Like, I think the difference with Miles Morales, right, is the fact that it's still a standalone thing. So you're still going to see there's a higher sales potential for Miles Morales as a standalone PS5 launch title than another DLC for Spider-Man 1, for example, right? But when I look at Phantom Liberty or I look at Shadow of the Erdtree, I have high expectations. I'm looking at those as, almost new experiences, right? Like, they're expansions. I had to have the base games to play those, but they might as well have been standalone for like the amount of pomp and circumstance around them. If you're gonna do a Spider-Man 2 DLC, I think it needs that pomp and circumstance, right?
I agree.
Can't feel it with the Stadia That Never Sleeps. If you remember, right, it came out a couple months after Spider-Man 1 came out.
I don't remember.
And it was like an episodic thing. Like, it all happened pretty quickly to the point where it didn't feel that special. I think Spider-Man 2, one, you would have to like wait for a little bit. You'd let Spider-Man 2, like the base game, marinate for a while. And then if you came back, let's say this fall, with a new DLC, it would have to feel substantial.
I agree. Things are different now. Things are different now. Kebabs in the chat says, I hate the argument that after you complete everything, you complain that there's nothing else to do. I do too. I want it clear. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I love this so much. I want more. That's it. Like, I feel like what they delivered was an amazing package with a great amount of things to do. And I think adding more at a certain point dilutes the product and makes it less. And it's just like, you're just adding more shit to collect.
I still hold the argument though that like, I wish there was more repeatable stuff. You know, you finish Spider-Man 2 and it is, all right, you can do the crimes or you can do like the Mysterio challenges. And aside from that, there's not other shit to do. I would love if there were like, hey, just replay. And I guess they did add this, I think, in this latest update that went live this week. But yeah, being able to go back and replay shit, I think, would help a lot with like the longevity of it. Yeah, and even more like,
now you can.
Which now you can, right? Plus, so that kind of fixes that complaint for me.
Yep. Moving on to story number 5, Watch Dogs movie is in the works at New Regency. This comes from Justin Kroll at Deadline. Following her breakout role in the A24 horror hit, Sophie Wilde has found her follow-up project as she's in talks to star in New Regency's Watch Dogs, an adaptation of the popular Ubisoft hit video game. The film is set within the universe of Ubisoft's blockbuster video game franchise of the same name with over 50 million players. The film is being directed by acclaimed French genre director...
Matthew.
Oh, no way.
I mean, they'll say it in a French way, but
wow.
Matthew.
Matthew Turi from an original screenplay written by Christy LeBlanc, known for writing the Netflix original sci-fi thriller Oxygen, based on the 2016 Blacklist script O2, and revised by Victoria Botta. While plot details are being kept under wraps, the popular game is set in fictionalized versions of real-life cities at various points in time and follow different hacker protagonists who, while having different goals to achieve, find themselves involved with the criminal underworlds of their respective cities.
Can you imagine being involved in the criminal underworld of San Francisco?
Yes.
Oh shit. Oh fuck. Oh god.
No, this is cool, I guess. Like this is the era we're in right now. And Ubisoft's made a ton of movies.
Yeah, like, but
they've done this before.
Have they made any bangers?
No.
Like
not movies, the shows. They like the Captain Laserhawk stuff.
I mean, if you count Mythic Quest is incredible.
Oh, dude, new season. They're working
is
on
it soon.
I don't know, but they put out a picture of like shooting or whatever.
Let's go.
Which I was like, every time a new season's being teased, I'm like, ooh, thank God.
I will say this last season of Mythic Quest wasn't my favorite compared to the first. How many seasons have there been?
Two? It's been four, right?
No way. I think it's been three.
But
it also might be two.
No. It's more than that.
Chat,
yeah.
Let us know. Whatever the last season was, wasn't
three.
As
There's
big of a...
Three.
There's been three? Three, yeah.
Yeah, season three, I wasn't as big of a fan of. I don't know if you remember season three.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
I remember you guys, you and Barrett, I think, being lower on it. I was higher on it. I still agree it's the weakest of the seasons, yeah. But like I just love the show. And I feel like when it hits, oh, it freaking hits, yeah. Man. There's going to be a spinoff show, too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, hopefully. Excited about all that. Mythic Quest, great. Watch Apple TV.
A Watch Dogs movie does so little for me, even though I do think if you took out the fact that this is a video game adaptation and just told me, hey, some people are working on a movie that takes place in like Chicago or San Francisco or London or whatever it is, and it involves a bunch of hackers that are like that get involved in criminal shit, I'd be like, oh, that sounds like a good movie. It sounds like a pretty good movie. But I don't know, like it being a Watch Dogs film, I was like, do you really need a Watch Dogs movie? Like, I don't write at this point, I don't even know if I expect another Watch Dogs game.
Yeah. That's where I'm at. I'm like, I don't really care for the Watchdog games. I don't really care for the movie.
I'm also thinking about the quality of the Assassin's Creed movie.
Yeah,
because that's all.
That was a different time though. Like, and like we're talking about new Regency.
Well, that was like
here.
2016, 2017. I guess that is a different time.
Yeah.
God damn.
Michael Fassbender, Prince of Persia.
When was that?
2008.
Yeah.
Something like that. Jake Gyllenhaal.
See, that's a different
Prince
time.
Prince of Persia.
That's it. Yeah, Ubisoft just be making movies.
They just be making movies. But bless
them.
I think they're gonna make movies forever.
Yeah,
and I'm tired of talking about things that big. If I wanted big something smaller, say the tiniest news I needed to know about, where would I go?
You would go to our last story, the Wii News Channel, where we cover all the small news items you need to know about.
Mike Toundro says Ubisoft made the Werewolves Within movie, and it's amazing.
Did you watch Werewolves
yes.
Within? And is it amazing? Is it really?
Yes. Fantastic. Written and I want to say directed by College Humor people or ex-College Humor people.
Well, that'll do it.
Amazing cast. I forgot who was in it, but they're bangers. It's great.
I mean, I'm putting my full support behind French genre director Mathieu Thierry. Yeah.
Let's hope.
But
let's
like, hope. I don't know, man. I'll watch the trailer and I'll come back to you.
Exactly.
I'll watch it on
this show and you'll know.
Yeah.
Prince of Persia movie was 2010. Thank you, Jake Collado there. Hunter Cross Hunter and Cross Impact has been confirmed to be a 2D fighting game for PS5, Switch, and PC.
Would you believe that the cross is silent?
Yeah, I would.
It's Hunter Hunter Ned Impact.
Great.
And the worry about this one was that it was going to be a 3D or like an arena fighter.
Mm.
And but like in their new thing here on their website.
Genre 2D
fighter. Thank God. Now, hopefully it's good. That's next up. Make it good.
Helldivers 2 community have unlocked Max after liberating Tian Quan.
Saw a tweet from Greg Miller right before the show that said it was like Tian Quan liberated like exclamation point and like is that thing where I'm like that's the last tweet that's the last thing I want to see Greg tweet is like him talking about the liberation of a country I've not heard of. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. I think it's a planet, but even still it's like I don't know the context, so when you just say we liberated this country that I've not heard of, I get worried coming from Greg Miller. I'm like, is he a sleeper agent?
Very fair. Capcom has released Dragon Dogma 2 character creator tool early on PC. WB, and I saw somebody had a great idea. Hold on, give me a second. I want to give credit if I can here. The Beauregard said, I have a great idea for a KF stream. You all download the Dragon's Dogma 2 character creator, then you task everyone with creating someone else in the office.
Oh, that'd be fun. I'm so bad with character creators, though, that I would not be able to make anything remotely close. The tweet from Greg Miller just says, victory in Tian Quan! Exclamation point. And I saw that, and I got really scared. I was like, he's been hacked.
WWE 2K24 is out today on everything. Unicorn Overlord is out today on PS5, Xbox X and S, PlayStation 4, and Switch. And that's it for the Wii News, everybody. Thank you for having another great week of super fun video game news stories.
Super fun.
Do we have any more super chats? We do. DJ Kento says set a reminder for 60 days. Let's just hope for the best.
What do
day 61?
What does Warner know that we don't know?
What do they know?
What's happening in 60 days?
God. Vulture says, Tim, Dune 2 in IMAX or Dolby? Honestly, at this point, whatever you can get better seats for, because they are selling out left and right on this thing, and it makes me very, very, very happy. I would say, though, given the option, I'd go with Dolby. This movie is not shot in IMAX the way that they're presenting it as if it was. And Dolby, you still get the, not the entire aspect ratio of IMAX, but you're getting the full screen effect on Dolby, which is a rare treat, and it sounds amazing. So I'd go Dolby, but IMAX is nothing to shake a stick at. DJ Kento says, I watched Matthew Turi's movie Meander. I have zero faith in this movie. Imagine Cube, but a tunnel and only one character.
Okay.
Damn. And then CJ splits on says, Mythic Quest Season 3 flashbacks were goated. Oh, yes. Facts on facts.
There's a Final Fantasy
episode that is incredible.
Yeah, that was a great one. Oh, we got another one that just came in.
Ooh.
The Mad Rock says, Oda's statement for Toriyama fucking broke me. I don't know if you saw this.
Did.
I forget the exact, there was like a banger quote in there that like, yeah, it got me emotional too. I think it was something along the lines of, I hope heaven is what Toriyama imagined it to be.
And was this the same thing that they also said that there was a moment in the past where Toriyama said, when it's time, take care of Goku for me. And they said, I will. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh man.
Now it's time for You're Wrong. Where you can write in, let us know what we screw up as we screw it up during the show. Kebab says, the concept of shooting a fireball or ki from your hands originates from wuxia stories and movies. Journey to the West and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon are the most famous wuxia works today. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
I wonder.
That sounds about right. I figured it was like more of like a thing that went back to like cultural like mythic story.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But yeah, I mean, look, the Kamehameha specific way of doing it definitely like was like
the Hadouken pose.
The Hadouken and like beam coming out, the charge of it. Like when the one of my favorite things I saw yesterday was one of the people that worked in Insomniac who did the design for Miles's animation. They reposted their one where Miles does essentially like the Kamehameha move to like shoot lightning out of his hands. Shit is fucking dope,
so
man.
So fucking sick. I got corrected by, I think it was Bander, saying that it was the Japanese voice actress for Goku that said what I said.
Oh, gotcha. And then somebody mentioned that Journey to the West is what Dragon Ball was inspired by.
Very sick. And that's it. What a show. What a week. What a time show to be alive.
Let's get some rest this weekend.
Get some rest, everybody. Take care of yourself. Love the people you love. Tell them you love them. Honestly, just
be good to people out there.
Be good to people out there and take care of yourselves. I think that's an important message as well. A great way to take care of yourselves, to hang out with us all day and have fun, because we're about to bring the fun heat today. Right after this, we're about to do Kinda Funny Game Showdown, the penultimate episode of season one. You can check it out, watching it on live. Ugh, what am I saying? Twitch. If you're here, just stay here. You'll be able to watch it. If you're watching on YouTube, though, you're going to need to make the jump over to the other YouTube link. Then, either way, we'll see you in a few short minutes. It's very exciting. Will I continue my dominant reign?
Did you watch last week's episode?
I did.
Ridiculous. You know, like, no matter what I can do, no matter what I try to do,
can't be stopped.
To balance the scales, Team Tim finds a way.
Find a way. Till next time. Love you all. Goodbye.